Jimmy Houston here from Jimmy Houston Outdoors. You know, when I'm not fishing, I'm listening to the Outdoor Journal radio show with Angelo Viola. Hey, let's get back to the show.
I'll bet you are. Thank you, Jimmy. Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Angelo Viola. And over there, fresh from Mexico, Stephen Labadie.
Hola.
Yeah.
Do you even know what I'm saying?
Stephen Labadie. How'd that go down there? Like, you know, how you doing?
How you doing?
Did you do the Labadie like I told you to?
I'm Stephen Labadie.
Yeah, that's what you need. Did you not use it?
They just laughed at me.
They did?
When I did that.
Yeah, are you
kidding
me? It
didn't work out so well.
Oh, man, that's a killer. Every day there's another story about climate change. Of course, rising greenhouse gas emissions, missed targets to reduce emissions. I mean, all kinds of stories about tax grab and carbon taxes. I mean, we've heard it all. But, you know, the bottom line is that this is not a perfect science. It is not a perfect science. That's not to say that it's not all true. It's not to say that it's not all happening, but it is not a perfect science. Joining us now is Dr. David Keith, who is a Canadian, a University of Toronto grad, now a professor of applied physics at Harvard University. He's considered one of the best in the field, and he and his team are working on a number of projects in solar geoengineering to address rising temperatures and greenhouse gas emissions. And we welcome him to the program. Good morning, David. How are you?
Hi there. Good to hear you.
Thanks for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. Obviously, you know, you being a Canadian adds a little special flair for us. I won't lie to you, but it really doesn't matter. This is a global issue, and so whether you're from Canada or not is irrelevant. But it's very cool. I have to tell you, it's very cool having somebody from here. Where are you from originally, by the way?
I grew up in Ottawa. Live in Alberta more now. But it's a global issue, but it's country by country battles, political battles about cutting emissions, and that's the core of what needs to happen.
So, as I understand it, your focus is on putting sunlight reflecting particles in the atmosphere. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I've led a bunch of work trying to understand whether it might be possible to reduce some of the risks of accumulating carbon dioxide by, say, putting aerosols, tiny particles, in the upper atmosphere. But to be clear, this does nothing to get you out of the need to cut emissions.
It does nothing to do that. Okay. Is there anything that we can do to step that part of the program up?
Absolutely. There's all sorts of things. Okay. Using technologies we have today, solar power, wind power, nuclear power, what we need to do is spend the money, which requires laws, to cut emissions. And that's the central challenge in a country-by-country basis.
Okay.
So basically, we need to not allow people to use the atmosphere as a free waste dump for carbon. And we need to find ways across the economy to transition the economy away from fossil fuels to low-carbon energy sources.
I mean, the biggest question is it even possible at this point?
There's no question whatsoever that it's possible. While energy is very important, energy is still, you know, only something like 5% of the total cost to developed economies. And there's no question that we could, step by step, you can't do it in a year, it's like 20 or 30 years, but you could transition the economy from fossil fuels to non-fossil alternatives.
Okay. All right. That would be obviously a huge leap. Some folks would say it cannot happen. It's impossible. But
I don't know any folks who know about the energy system who are thoughtful who say that. Obviously, this is a political battle, and there are people in the oil patch, including friends of mine in Alberta, who don't like the threat to their jobs. But the fact is, we can't keep putting CO2 in the atmosphere and expect to have a stable climate. Expect to have the world outdoors that we love. So it simply has to happen. And it's not unprecedented that we spend really big money to change parts of the economy to reduce environmental pollution. We've done that for ozone. We've done that for air pollution. We've done it for water pollution. We have to do it for carbon pollution.
Yeah. One of the issues I personally have with this whole thing, by the way, just so that you know where I'm sitting on this whole It's all well and good to think that we can make our little difference here in this country. And I've seen the specs on what we could do if everything went well and what our part would look like in the overall picture. And it is so minute that I sometimes wonder if we're even approaching this the right way. When you can't get the Giants to play the game, and in this case, obviously, I'm talking about, you know, the giant polluters. When you can't get them to even agree that there is a problem, I just wonder, you know, and I hate throwing in the towel on anything. I'm not that type of person. But I just wonder if it isn't time to say, okay, you know what, when you guys figure it out, when you figure out that we need help and we need to get this thing under control, come back and see me and I'll see if I can participate. But to think that we can be leaders in that, I don't know. I don't know, man.
That seems like an unbelievable cop-out, and to be blunt, kind of weird ethics. So being a small part of something, the issue is what is the proportionality of our impacts to how many of us there are? You know, if I was thinking it was fine for me to throw my garbage on the street, arguing that I'm just one in a city of a million, it doesn't matter if I throw my garbage and don't bother to put it in the trash, just throw it in the street.
No.
I could argue to you, heck, you know, I'm small, I'm just one person, doesn't matter. But the point is, if everybody does that, we're screwed.
Yeah,
and each person has a responsibility in each country for their garbage.
Right. So what I'm saying
it's not true. Yep.
What I'm saying, it's the opposite, David. What I'm saying, I agree with you 100%, by the way. What you're saying is bang on to what my belief is. If, in fact, everybody was throwing their garbage on the street, it would be very difficult for any of us to start, you know, rationally saying, well, I'm going to still do my part, even though the garbage is I can't even walk anymore. It's all garbage around me, but I'm still going to put that little piece of plastic in the box. I think eventually that would be difficult for us to do. However, if the whole neighborhood, the community, the city, the town, the country, the world is on that program, it would be hard for you not to be. That's my argument. Right. And when you've got places like China and India and the U.S. who are saying, I don't know, I don't think we're going to be playing by the rules anymore, guys, it's tough. That's the difficulty here.
So that's not exactly what's happening. So for pollution, China is actually spending an extraordinary amount of money now, probably well over 1% of their total economy on counting pollution, focusing most of all on air pollution, but not only. And the U.S. has actually dropped carbon emissions where Canada's are up. That's mostly because of coal to gas switching, but it's also because of really large investments driven by policy in renewables. And you're right that the U.S. government, the federal government, the Trump administration has dropped out of Paris, but that actually does not mean that it stopped lots of actions both at the federal and state level. So no country is doing this perfectly, but the idea that Canadians can just say, well, the big boys, China and the U.S., are doing nothing or claim there's no problem, that's not a true statement.
Okay.
I think they're not doing as much as I would like, but they are doing something. And you know, hypocrisy is everywhere. So people will make wild claims about how they're going to make everything good. And governments and politicians love to make claims how they're going to do cut emissions and have beautiful climate futures without doing anything. So I'm not saying any country's doing it right, but lots of countries are doing something. Worldwide, we're spending $300 billion a year on clean energy.
Yep.
So it's not zero. And I would like to be proud of Canada as, you know, being ahead of the pack, as focusing on really working hard to cut its emissions ahead of the pack.
Yeah. Well, listen, anytime you can be first in your class, it's wonderful to do that, obviously. And yeah, I'm with you. If we could ever get to that point, I think it'd be great. I just I look around and I'm a little cynical on some of the programs that are being introduced by governments and you know. But anyways, that's me. Don't worry about me. I'm just one tiny little voice in this whole thing.
But you have an audience, and I think that cynicism is corrosive. The fact is, we live in a time of real challenge to Western democracies everywhere, based on a level of cynicism and a level of hypocrisy at the top. And we can't expect to act together and do things as functioning societies with that kind of cynicism. That's what ends up with street protests and disaster.
Well, I agree with you, my friend. It would be great if we could put together a perfect world, and I'm sure everybody listening to this program would love their world to be perfect. But unfortunately, we live in one that's not, and we have opinions about it, and we have to continue. I love what you're doing. I think we need more people like you to keep pushing everybody in that same direction, and eventually we will get there. Keep up the good work. I think it's been. Talk to me about this. I'm still intrigued by this whole sun dimming thing, and you're putting sunlight reflecting particles into the atmosphere. Talk to me. Where did that come from?
Well, the ideas are old. I mean, let's step back. What do you do about climate change? So there's sort of four things you can do. First of all, we have to cut emissions. We've been talking about that breaks the link between industrial economy and emissions of carbon dioxide. Then the next thing that's possible to do is you could take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. That partly breaks the link between the emissions, the amount we put in each year, and the concentrations, the total amount that's in the atmosphere of carbon dioxide that drives climate. Then it's possible to do this thing called solar geoengineering or solar radiation manipulation. There's a bunch of names for it that might partially, not perfectly, break the link between the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere and the climate change, the amount of temperature change or extreme temperatures or changes in water, what have you. That's been kind of a taboo to look at it, but that taboo is gradually breaking. The idea is old. And then the last thing is local adaptation measures, you know, ways that say you might build dikes. So I'm standing in Boston today, and parts of Boston will flood in the next century because of climate change. And the question is what we might do locally to build dikes or whatever to protect ourselves. So basically emissions cuts, carbon removal, solar geoengineering, and adaptation are the things humans can do about the climate crisis, about a climate threat. And so solar geoengineering is this set of ideas. And right now, what I and others are advocating are simply that we look at these ideas seriously. I don't know whether we should do them, but I think we don't make good decisions when things are taboo, and we ought to look at them carefully and understand their risks and how they might be governed.
Perfect. Beautiful. I love it. Keep up the good work, David, and keep us informed on what's going on. Obviously, I think it's vital that, you know, if nothing else, everybody needs to make their own personal decisions based on good, sound information. And you can't beat
that. Well, thank you.
Can't
beat that. And I hope people who love the Canadian outdoors really think hard about what part we can play to protect it, because letting CO2 in the atmosphere, changing the climate, is the biggest kind of global scale, international environmental threat we face. And people need to really think about how they and their communities and their countries can play a part in resolving it.
Make no mistake about it, my friend, the outdoors community are leaders in that stuff, and you probably already know that. That's why you're on this program, and I agree with you 100%. We need to continue moving in that direction. Thank you very much for joining us, David.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Dr. David Keith, professor of applied physics, Harvard University.
Very cool.
Very. What did he say? I was toxic.
Certain degree.
Was it? Oh no, not toxic. It was corrosive.
Yeah.
I think. Wow.
Same
Mark
way.
It down before we forget. See, that's important that we know where that stuff is.
Are?
Well, no, but yes, absolutely.